My transcription.
I have endured a great deal of ridicule without much malice, and have received a great deal of kindness, not quite free from ridicule.
Mr. President, starring Edward Arnold and written by Gene Holloway. Mr. President, at home in the White House, the elected leader of our people, our fellow citizen and neighbor. These are little-known stories of the men who have lived in the White House. Dramatic, exciting events in their lives that you and I so rarely hear. True human stories of Mr. President.
Before we bring you Edward Arnold as Mr. President, a word or two. Rarely before in the history of our country has the office of the presidency been of such vital importance as it is today. Now, as you know, the Constitution is very specific about the powers and duties of the president, making him somewhat subject to the will of Congress in domestic matters, and the president is our personal representative in such matters. Into this important picture enter the Mr. President stories, telling in warm human terms of the adventures, the troubles, and the joys of the men who have held the nation's highest office. You, our listeners, have the added thrill of testing your historical knowledge when you try to identify the president of each story. And now, see if you can name the president upon whom this episode is based.
We have received hundreds and hundreds of letters from listener friends of Mr. President all over the country, suggesting their favorite president and their entry for the four greatest stories of Mr. President. Today we've picked a story of one of those four, and I'm sure as you listen to it, you'll know which man it is about. So now for today's story. The days were dark, pain-shadowed, full of heartache. The president was tired, with a weariness of spirit and body and mind that seemed all-consuming. Even to those that had known him in the long ago, it seemed inconceivable that once he had been young and tireless, that once he could outrun, outleap, out-wrestle any other lad in his part of the country. Even to those who had known him in the long ago, it sometimes seemed inconceivable that once he had been young and light-hearted and full of gaiety. But for that matter, it sometimes seemed impossible that they had been young, or anyone else in the war-weary nation. Towards evening, the president stood in his office, studying the colored pins on the map on the wall.
I'm going down to the War Office. Would you care to walk down with me, Mr. President?
Yes, I was just thinking of going myself.
So far, the news is good. And if we win this battle, this could be the turning point.
If we win. And if we do win, Fred, we lose.
Lose, Mr. President?
It's impossible to win a war. No war ever returns what it costs. No victory, however brilliantly won, can bring back life to the dead, or peace to the heart that waits in vain for the sound of a voice returning. It must end, Fred. It must end.
I don't think it can go on much longer.
Look at the pins on that map. Those pins indicate the military positions of our troops. Every little while, someone comes in and changes them, and each time they do, I know that men have died. Men whose lives might have been living monuments to their country. Oftentimes I sit here late at night searching my heart and my conscience, asking what could I have done to avoid this conflict. And step by step I go through it over and over, and always come to the same answer, the same heartbreaking answer. There is no way but the way we travel now.
Come, sir. Let's go see if there's any news at the War Office.
Yes, yes. You know, a lot of folks believe I blundered in putting General Meade in charge of the Army of the Potomac, but I have a great deal of faith in him.
Where is General Meade in the Army now?
On the way to Richmond.
Mm-hmm.
message is correct, Ed?
Yes, sir. We've confirmed it, Mr. President. The enemy is now in Pennsylvania.
I see. Very well, then. Let us telegraph General Meade at once that his orders are no longer to proceed to Richmond, but to find and fight the enemy.
Mr. President, General Meade is new in command. He's never planned an engagement of such size. And you're pitting him against one of the greatest military men in the country.
I know, but General Meade, considering his present location, is in the best position to find and fight the enemy.
Well, I grant you that, sir, but I still wish that someone with more experience. As Secretary of War, I must point out to you that 58 of our most experienced regiments have just been permitted to go home. In their place, General Meade has raw, untrained troops.
I believe General Meade and his men are equal to the engagement. Please God, they must be equal to it. Telegraph my instructions at once, Ed. They are to find and fight the enemy. Another word, Ed?
No, sir, not yet. The battle is still in progress.
Oh, if we only knew. If we were only there. If the telegraph service were better. If.
But the service is bound to be slow, sir. We're fortunate to have any contact at all with the battlefield.
Yes, I know. Has there been any further word of the casualties?
Our losses are heavy.
A new message, Mr. President. The enemy is repulsed. They're falling back.
Well, come on, let's have a look at that message.
Mr. President, don't you think you ought to rest? At least for an hour or two?
No, Fred, I can't leave here. I'm all right. This may be the turning point of the war. I can't leave.
Well, then let me get you something to eat. You haven't had a thing.
Oh, I couldn't eat a mouthful.
General Meade's message to his Army of the Potomac just came in, Mr. President.
Yes, what is it? What is it?
I'll read it to you. An enemy superior in number and flushed with the pride of a successful invasion attempted to overcome and destroy this army. Utterly baffled and defeated, he has now withdrawn from the contest. The commanding general looks to the army for greater efforts to drive from our soil every vestige of the presence of the invader.
The presence of the invader. Thank you, Abe.
It's victory, Mr. President. Don't look like that. It's victory. The Confederate forces are routed.
Yes, routed. And if any one of the estimates are correct, there are close to 50,000 dead.
50,000? Why, I heard that our casualties were over 20,000, but
yes,
I...
Yes, that's the report. That's the report. But the losses are close to 50,000. Almost 30,000 of the Southern boys.
Oh.
Look at those stars, Fred. Look at them and thank God you're alive to see them. That you're alive to feel the wind on your face and the earth under your feet and the smell, the summer fragrance of the air. Look at the stars well, for yourself and for them. Their days of youth and dreams and stars are over. 50,000. 50,000.
But, Mr. President, you said yourself this may be the turning point of the whole war.
Yes, I know. Well, I must get back to my office. I want to prepare a message telling the country of the victory of the Army of the Potomac.
Mr. President.
Yes?
The doorman let me sit here. He said if I waited here, I'd be sure to catch you. I know it's an imposition waiting in your office like this, but my need was so great, and I've been trying to see you for so long. And I Secretary Stanton said I shouldn't bother you, and I know I shouldn't.
Now, don't let yourself go to pieces. Sit down. You look very tired.
I thought I was tired until I looked at your face, Mr. President. Now I realize I don't even know what it is to be tired.
Tell me, how can I help you?
I have three sons and my husband fighting with the Union armies. I have a farm to manage, and I can't manage it without help. Oh, please. Please, would you arrange for one of my sons to come home and help me for a time? If you don't, we will lose everything, Mr. President.
Tell me where your sons and your husband are.
I have it all written down on this paper. Their regiments and their companies. From all I'm able to learn, the boy at the head of the list is closest by.
I see. Well, I'll write you the order you want.
Oh, thank you, Mr. President.
But I must warn you, your son's company has been engaged in battle.
In battle?
Yes.
Well, my boys know how to take care of themselves. You should see them, Mr. President. Big, strapping fellows. I never was one to brag about my own, but they do any mother's heart good just to see them.
I pray from the bottom of my heart that all is well with them. Now, if you will follow my instructions as I have written them for you, everything possible will be done to reunite you with your son.
How can I thank you?
Pray for me.
I will. Good night, Mr. President.
Good night, and God keep you.
Mr. President, could you tell me, please, where did the battle take place?
Gettysburg. Yes?
Mr. President, are you going to stay down here all night? It's almost dawn.
Is it? Well, the dispatches keep coming, and I don't want to miss any of them. And I've been working on my message I wanted to issue today. Do you realize what day this is, Fred? It's the 4th of July. A sacred day in the history of the freedom of man.
Another report just came in. They're expecting rain at Gettysburg, and they believe that General Lee will begin his retreat today.
How fitting that it should rain. As though God himself joined us in our grief. Look, Fred, it's dawn. Dawn over Washington, dawn over Richmond, dawn over Gettysburg. Let us pray that it is the dawn of peace between the brothers. Let us pray that we who make up these United States of America at last may know the meaning of the word united.
In just a moment, we'll come back to Ed O'Donnell and Mr. President. The better we produce, the better we live. That's always been the basis of the American economic system. The reason our people have always worked so hard in their jobs and businesses. But our economic system has been the subject of many attacks lately by other countries. And some people tend to quickly forget the vast benefits America's economic system has brought them. That's why each of us should make it our duty to understand this system. Our unrivaled prosperity is due to our combination of machine power, individual freedom, free competition, and efficient methods of distribution. Let's learn the truth about our economic system. Write for the free booklet, The Miracle of America, which explains clearly and simply how by working together, a still better living can be had for all. Address Box 10, Times Square Station, New York City, and ask for your copy. And now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
I'm sure you know who the president was when all this happened. It really did happen, so listen closely. The long days and nights of prayer and heartbreak went on. The woman who had asked for one of her sons to help her saw her first son die of wounds he had suffered during the Battle of Gettysburg. And the president had her next son released to return home with her. But there were thousands he was powerless to help. The thousands of living to whom the word Gettysburg meant the end of a world. In November, the president received an invitation to attend services for the dedication of Gettysburg as a National Soldiers' Cemetery. There had been quite a lot of discussion about sending him the invitation.
Well, I don't object to sending him the invitation, but suppose he wants to speak.
Well, now, why shouldn't he speak? He's the president of the United States, isn't he?
Yes, but in my opinion, he's not much of a speaker. And anyway, we've invited Edward Everett to speak. He's the greatest orator in the country today. No man in his right mind would want to speak on the same platform with Everett.
Mr. Everett already working on a speech, isn't he?
Yes, he said he had to have plenty of time to get it ready. I don't blame him either. It takes a long time to write the kind of speech that has to be made at a time like this.
Well, I still say that as long as this to be a national cemetery, we've got to invite the president of the nation to be there.
Well, all right, then. You write him, Mr. Wells, and ask him to say a few appropriate words dedicating the grounds.
Yes, there had been quite a lot of discussion about sending the president an invitation at all. But finally it was sent, and in due time the president's answer came back.
Well, it's all settled. He'll be here. He says that after Mr. Everett's oration, he'll speak a few short words. I'm glad he said short. After Everett, the shorter, the better.
Mr. President.
Oh, hello, Fred. What are you doing out on Sunday?
I was just walking over to see if there's anything I could do for you.
Well, I'm on my way back from Mr. Gardner's studio.
Oh, did you have some pictures taken?
Yes, I've had this to do for some time, and it seemed impossible to get there during the week. Are you still going down to Gettysburg with me?
Why, yes, of course.
I'm happy to hear that. I'll be glad of some company. Ed Stanton and Chase and several of the others don't think it's necessary for them to go, or for me either. But I don't agree with them. Frankly, I think they're of the opinion that I'm not going to make much of a showing on the platform after Edward Everett's oration.
No, that's ridiculous.
No, it isn't. I'm sure I won't make much of a showing after Mr. Everett. But they're losing sight of the reason why I'm going to Gettysburg. I'm going there to pay my respects, not to enter a competition.
Well, you're going to address the crowd, aren't you?
Oh, I'm just going to say a few words dedicating the grounds, and what those words are going to be, I still don't know. I've been trying to sit down and think it out for several days now, but there's been first one interruption and then another, and I've had to work on my message to Congress.
You're trying to carry too much.
I wish I could carry more. I thought I could do a little thinking about Gettysburg today while Mr. Gardner took his pictures, but we got to talking, and all of a sudden the time was gone. I'm going into my office now and shut myself in, and no one's going to keep me from working on that speech. Today at Gettysburg, 87 years since. 87 years since. 87 years ago. No. 87 years ago. Yes, who is it?
Good afternoon, Mr. President. Good evening. It's getting dark.
Oh, hello, Ed. I'm working on my speech for Gettysburg. Did you want to talk to me?
Do you still want me to arrange for a special train to take you there?
Why, of course. Why not?
Well, I thought perhaps you might have changed your mind about going. With all you have to do here...
Regardless of all I have to do here, I can take the time to honor the dead of Gettysburg.
Well, I don't think it's safe for you to go. I don't think you should get up before a mob like that at a time like this. It isn't safe,
oh,
sir.
I'll be all right.
Everett will be there to make a speech. I don't know why you insist on going. People are unaccountable now, so...
You don't know why I insist on going, Ed? Ed, would any father miss the funeral of his sons?
I will order the train, Mr. President.
Thank you. And now, if you don't mind too much, Ed, I must ask you to excuse me. I'm trying to plan some sort of a little speech here. Yes?
Mr. President.
What is it? What is it, Fred?
You're wanted right away at your house, sir. Your son, Tad, is very ill.
What's wrong with the boy, Doctor? What's wrong with him?
I wish I could tell you, Mr. President. He has a fever. So far, that's all we know.
Well, tell me what's causing the fever.
I don't know. He's obviously picked up some sort of infection.
What are you going to do?
Well, there isn't much we can do right now except keep a close eye on him. I'll be back again later tonight.
Doctor, I've already lost one son since I've entered this house. If I were to lose another, I don't think I could bear it.
Well, lots of children have these strange illnesses and recover. A fever isn't always serious.
That boy means the world and all to me.
I know, and I'm sure he's going to be all right.
Try not to let his mother know how high the fever is. She's never recovered completely from Willie's death, you know.
I know. Oh, the lad was calling for you before he fell asleep. Stay with him and call if you can, will you?
Yes, of course.
I'll stop by around 10.
How is Tad, Mr. President?
We don't know. The doctor's coming back this evening.
Shall I call off your trip to Gettysburg?
No, friend.
But how can you leave tomorrow noon?
I'll leave Tad in the care of Almighty God. Fred, there are 50,000 Tads in Gettysburg. 50,000 Tads at Gettysburg.
Mr. President.
Yes, friend.
Shall I go out? Perhaps you'll be able to write your speech if I'm not here. You haven't much time left.
Fred, I'd forgotten you were here. I'd almost forgotten about my speech.
Are you worried about Tad? The doctor said he was...
Yes, I know the doctor said he was better. No, it's not that. It's many things, so many things. Sometimes it seems to me that I carry the grief and sorrow of the entire nation within me. And that sorrow and grief is inexpressible. I don't know what to say to them at Gettysburg. I don't know what to say to them.
Mr. President, it certainly will be an honor to have you as a guest in my home.
Thank you, Mr. Wills. That's very gracious of you.
I only wish I could accommodate you too, Miss Seward.
Now, that's quite all right. I know how crowded you are. I'm sure I should be quite happy at Mr. Harper's.
Oh, yes. He's looking forward to receiving you, sir. You know, I'm sure this is the biggest crowd there ever has been in Gettysburg. People have been pouring into our town by the thousands. There's no accommodation for them at all. I'm told the people are sleeping on the floors of the hotels and in the fields. In fact, any place they can find. Everyone's very eager to hear your speech tomorrow, Mr. President.
My speech?
Oh, yes, sir, of course.
Well, I'm not planning much of a speech, Mr. Wills. I shall have very little to say. Mr. Everett must say the words that will be memorable.
Here we are, sir. Oh, it seems to be crowded in front of the house. They're waiting for you, Mr. President.
Are you coming in, Fred?
No, sir. If you don't mind, I'll go on over to Mr. Harper's and get settled.
I see. Well, I'll talk to you later. I made some notes on the train. I know now pretty much what I'm going to say.
Good morning, Mr. President.
Good morning, friend. Did you sleep well?
Yes, thank you, sir. And you?
I sat up thinking most of the night.
We'll have your horse ready in a moment, Mr. President.
Thank you, Mr. Wells.
Oh, I certainly wish we didn't have to parade down the street on horseback. That seems to be what they want.
Oh, I don't mind.
Did you get a chance to work on your speech, Mr. President?
Yes, I jotted down a few words along the lines we discussed last night, friend.
Do you know, I was so tired when you came over that I'm not even sure what we did discuss.
Well, then you must listen today. But you'll have to listen closely because I'm liable to be finished before you think I've fairly begun.
We're ready to begin the procession, Mr. President. You and Mr. Seward will come and take your mounts.
Yes, of course. We're ready. Come, friend. Well, the time has gotten away from me, hasn't it? And such as it is, I must make my Gettysburg address. You probably figured out by now who the president was when all that happened. It really did happen, you know, and you'll have the answer in just a moment.
The adjective dynamic perfectly describes Walter Winchell, one of the country's most powerful reporters of the news. Winchell's dynamic news delivery has made him a favorite with millions. For Walter Winchell not only tells the facts about the news, he gets behind the news. Winchell's famous, too, for his daring exclusives. And when a news story breaks, whether here in America or in a far-off news center, you can count on Walter Winchell to have a different story about it, a story you won't read about in your newspapers. So, for important inside news on the headline events of the week, plus extraordinary exposés and daring exclusives, hear Walter Winchell. He broadcasts tonight over these same ABC stations. And now back to Edward Arnold and Mr. President.
Ladies and gentlemen, the President of the United States.
Four score and 7 years ago, our fathers brought forth upon this continent a new nation, conceived in liberty and dedicated to the proposition that all men are created equal. Now we are engaged in a great civil war, testing whether that nation or any nation so conceived and so dedicated can long endure. We are met on a great battlefield of that war. We are met to dedicate a portion of it as the final resting place of those who have given their lives that that nation might live. It is altogether fitting and proper that we should do this. But in a larger sense, we cannot dedicate, we cannot consecrate, we cannot hallow this ground. The brave men living and dead who struggled here have consecrated it far above our power to add or to detract. The world will very little note, nor long remember what we say here. But it can never forget what they did here. It is for us, the living, rather to be dedicated here to the unfinished work that they have thus far so nobly carried on. It is rather for us to be here dedicated to the great task remaining before us, that from these honored dead we take increased devotion to that cause for which they here gave the last full measure of devotion, that we here highly resolve that these dead shall not have died in vain, that the nation shall, under God, have a new birth of freedom, and that government of the people, by the people, for the people, shall not perish from the earth. And there, ladies and gentlemen, is the story of Abraham Lincoln and the Gettysburg Address, the story chosen by you, our listeners, as the favorite presidential story. Be with us again next week, won't you, for another story that happened in Washington a few years ago to Mr. President. Until then, goodbye.
This program is produced and directed by Dick Warren. Edward Arnold may currently be seen in the Paramount picture, Dear Wife. Mr. President was created by Robert G. Jennings. Today's story was based on incidents in the life of President Abraham Lincoln.
Be sure to listen again next week when the American Broadcasting Company and its affiliated stations bring you Edward Arnold with another interesting and factual story of Mr. President. This program was transcribed earlier for release to our listeners at this more convenient time. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company. More convenient time. This is ABC, the American Broadcasting Company.